SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201. Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. And still lots to digest from the weekend, plus some things to start to look forward to already in a big, really cross-country type of a Saturday coming, the first Saturday in March, and really, first Saturday in April, first Saturday in May. They just keep building in intensity. The draws tomorrow, and we think we've got a pretty good handle already on Tampa and the San Felipe and the Gotham. Yeah, you know, some cross purposes in the Gotham, some horses that, you know, seemingly are more one turn oriented for the duration, but in Tampa and in Arcadia, the showdowns, the players changed, particularly at Tampa, where Independence Hall redirected cross state for Florida Derby and Chance It bypassing Saturday for the Fountain of Youth. So we'll touch on these undoubtedly. Andy Serling in hour two, and we'll look ahead a little bit, I'm sure, with Andy toward the weekend. We'll also get some opinions about what we saw, and of course the big TV show, which was really good and really fun on Saturday. 3.5 hours of coverage, and they hit all the highlights. It was a busy show, and I want to get Andy's opinions too to the to the results. And then in New York this weekend, in addition to the Gotham, if you aren't aware, you got the Tom Fool, you got the Stymie, and you got the Busher. So a very nice Saturday ahead in New York. John White is going to join us as well, and certainly John's tracking the three-year-old scene, so we'll get his opinion of the Fountain, and we'll look ahead to Big Cap. Is it Big Cap Day or is it San Felipe Day? You make the determination. You make the call. But there's some nice horses that are going to come out on Saturday. You also got the San Carlos and the Kilroe, so China Doll as well. So then everything at Tampa. So if I sound like I'm kind of anxious for the next round, I kind of am. Not that Saturday was unsatisfying by any means. Certainly the performance that you got in the Fountain. I mean, from Ete in the end, that's going to hold up, you know, very nicely. So we'll see. We'll see what emerges, because Thousand Words, who, you know, continues to kind of grind along. He actually worked yesterday, if you didn't see it, and seemed a little more screwed down and a little quicker than he's been. But Storm the Court is going to try to right the ship. And Honor AP, who missed some time, kind of getting started for the three-year-old season for Sheriffs a little bit later. Baffert's also got Authentic. Very interesting. I mean, if it was just those four, that'd be fine. But Rafael Becerra's got Fast Enough, and Peter Miller considering Wrecking Crew. But the two Bafferts, the Sheriffs and the Urton, the two-year-old champ, that makes for a heavyweight free-for-all. And I happened to have talked a little bit this morning with Ian Wilkes, and he's got the two for the Tampa Bay Derby, Let Me Know and Violent City. They're both going to run. Mike Maker's got a pair too, Mimosa and Relentless Dancer. And we're waiting for Todd Pletcher. Apparently, Pletcher told Marty McGee he might run all three, Texas Swing, Palm Springs, and Market Analysis. But it feels like at least two of those are going to go, and potentially all three. So could have a field of 10 or 11 at Tampa. And the Gotham is really just kind of interesting. You got that horse that Dale talked about yesterday, Attachment Rate. And Jack Sisterson brings back Flapjack, making his three-year-old debut. Mark Cassie, who we will talk to, and I will talk not so much about his horses, because Mark could have a very nice weekend in the offing. And there's a very good chance we hear from Mark next Monday doing some recapping. For instance, Untitled and more going this weekend. But the conversation with Mark is a follow-up to two actual pieces of news from yesterday. He was in the headlines. And one, of course, the Hall of Fame finalist announcement that we went over yesterday. Mark taking another turn on the ballot. But it was his op-ed piece in the TDN that really caught a wave. And Mark came out swinging against clenbuterol. And, you know, clenbuterol we've discussed many, many times with Dr. Alday, and its use and its abuse. And I don't think any horsemen or any vets would argue that there's plenty of beneficial application, but that's not what's at issue here. What Mark really pointedly discussed was the abuse of clenbuterol and advocating essentially for its elimination completely. Forget about withdrawal times, whether, you know, some places are 7 days, 14 days, 21 days. Mark is saying, just get rid of it and we'll learn to live without it. And Dr. Alday is going to join us as well. I reached out to Steve even before, because Mark has got a big day. He's got a lot of work horses this morning that are making, you know, essentially their starts before stake assignments and more. So but Mark wants to come on and he wants to discuss it. So after initially scheduling him for this first hour, we're going to get to Mark in the second half of the show. But Dr. Alday will talk about clenbuterol's proper application and its evolution into something to be abused, essentially, something to be overused and something that can essentially mask or not mask steroid. It can mimic, essentially. That's probably a better word. It can. Not even duplicate. I'll let the vet tell you. but it can have the same, you know, muscle building enhancement effect that steroids did. And you know, frankly, a lot of the things, and this would be something good for both Mark and for Dr. Alday to riff on, you know, how much of the abuse of other products and particularly non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, how much of that is evolved since steroids were pushed out? Right? Isn't that, you would think that a lot of these topics, and in fact, Georgina Baxter getting 25 days for stacking of non-steroidals, and you know, basically a lot of these, you know, when these violations are being flagged, essentially, aren't they all, you know, trying to mimic? That was the word we were looking for. Weren't they all trying to mimic what steroids, the properties steroids offered for years and years and years? So we'll let Mark talk about, you know, what he thinks the benefit would be, immediate. And if you haven't read his piece in the TDN, pull it up. I'll send a link out in advance if you haven't seen it yet. And, you know, Mark talks about how, you know, there's several different ways that it's had a negative effect. And again, no, if used properly as basically a bronchodilator, essentially, you know, an asthmatic treatment, it's a very useful and effective medication. But it's the abuse that, you know, you heard stories about, you know, horses getting literally getting a shot of Clen, you know, 20 minutes on the walkover. I mean, that was a 10 years ago. That was something you would hear about. I remember bringing that up with Dr. Allday. There's a lot to discuss on this. And so having both Mark and Dr. Allday address it, but it certainly, Mark's piece was met with, you know, widespread applause. And, you know, like anything, you know, the horsemen are very adaptable. They just want to know what the rules are, lay them out, and they'll adapt. Haven't had a chance since last week. Going into the weekend, the circumstances with the CHRB, speaking of rules, you know, the CHRB has got some rules going into effect, and horsemen are a little, just on this topic, are just a little exasperated that there's a couple of aspects of rules that they don't sense were discussed widely. They were just sort of snuck in, as opposed to, you know, having the full-fledged, you know, discussion and comment period. We got to visit that this week, because that caused, you know, predictable confusion. So, I mean, a lot of this is happening at once, and while there's, I would imagine, agreement that, you know, the attempt to modify the rules and to try to, you know, create, you know, a healthier, safer atmosphere, etc., for the good of the horse, it's providing some of the same confusion and consternation and, you know, that any topic being addressed like it is will have. So Mark's piece was a broad stroke as opposed to a specific. So we've got a bunch of specific industry participant news. I mentioned the Baxter suspension, which got a bit of an eye roll, having taken over from Kirk Zadie, Ralph Zadie. That Actually, we're going to discuss the specifics of that with, you know, the stacking topic with Dr. Allday as well. And obviously the sadness of Richard Gámez's passing that we mentioned late yesterday with Tony. And, you know, I didn't realize he was that old. He was 67 and had been around Rito and around the quarter horse side and for decades and decades, and actually had been riding horses the same amount of time as Tony, had ridden and won races in every decade since 1970, just like Tony. A whole bunch of things to get to. Tim Ritvo leaving the Stronach Group. It's kind of a long-anticipated shoe drop. Let's take a break. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Took a trip on a bus that I didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. Said truth comes back when you let it go. Seem complicated because it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on a Friday. Can't follow them, gotta do it my way. No fast lane, still on the highway. Moving in and out, no doubt there's a ride.
No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. No time to get down, cause I'm moving up. Shake off the grass in the bucket. No time to get down, cause I'm.
We're back at the races. And just had a exchange with Alan Foreman, and you know, Alan listening and made the point that the, you know, the conscious effort of the Mid-Atlantic rules, essentially, you know, the withdrawal times have really eliminated, or at least seemingly eliminated. They've seen a big drop in clenbuterol abuses, so we'll let Mark and Dr. Allday hash it out. One of the points that Mark made was that the and frankly, this came up, if you recall, in California. I don't even want to call it the skirting of the rules, but as Mark pointed out, using certain legal medications in cycles, and then adhering to the withdrawal time as prescribed, running, and then having a period of time where the horse cycles through again with the legal meds, but loses the opportunity because of the physical effects, loses time, and essentially horses that on paper, no reason why they couldn't run 6, 7, 8, or let's say more, 8 times a year, 9 times a year. I mean, we got our Carlisle Bell. She ran 12 times 2 years ago, 13 times last year. I mean, essentially every 4 weeks it trotted her out. And, she had basically the same range of performance. But the point Mark is going to make is that, utilizing a legal medication like clenbuterol while trying to mimic those steroidal effects, you're basically cutting down a horse's opportunity to run to every 75 days, as opposed to every 4 weeks, 3, 4, 5 weeks, the way meat and potato claimers and sort of that middle portion of the sport performs. And I mean, aside from taking advantage of the animal, the other part of this is that it's hurting the game by lowering the number of starts that horses are making and field size and everything we talk about from the gambling side. So it's got a negative effect on the horse, as Mark was saying, and I mean, his point wasn't about the business side, but it's not good for business either. So this is why I think there's there's been universal appreciation for Mark writing what he wrote, and we'll flesh it out later on with the two of them. Some of the individuals we mentioned, of course, the other day about the sudden passing of John Wayne, and the longtime investigator and official. And I wanted to provide the specifics for this week. There is a viewing on Friday, 10 to 12 a.m. at George Wimberg Funeral Home in Linwood, New Jersey. Service starts at noon, and then a burial follows at Laurel Memorial Park in Egg Harbor. Really, really tough. A week and a half after the passing of his mother. And from the horse side, John, had a number of contribution suggestions. American Cancer Society, American Heart Association, Multiple Sclerosis Society, Delaware chapter, but from a horse side of the industry, the Jockeys Welfare Fund that Bob Colton administers at Delaware Park. So there'll be a lot of people on hand from the sport. I didn't realize that John was I always thought of him strictly as a you know, mid Delaware-ish type, but he actually was from Stony Brook and Long Island, essentially, which I didn't realize. And his career was amazing, just amazing. And his family, his stepfather was at NYRA for 50 years, and John worked 6-7 years at NYRA, then for the TRPB, and all around the country. And then later, he was at Churchill for many years, and on and on. I mean, there wasn't any place that essentially that John Wayne didn't ply his trade, and very, very respected and highly thought of. Really sad. So I wanted to get those arrangements in as well. The story, of course, from Saturday that took, I think, a lot of people seemingly by surprise, the split between John Velasquez and Angel Cordero after 3 decades together. And this, if it was any other pair of rider and agent, nobody would really, you know, it happens on a regular basis, and nobody would really be shocked per se. But given their relationship, it shook people up on Saturday evening. The news had come out, was trickling out late last week. And then on Saturday after the racing, the Daily Racing Forum correspondents, Mike Welsh and Dave Grenig, working the story. And Dave is followed up in New York with Angel. And it's just sad. There is a sadness to this that. Yeah, sort of like when a career like a Hall of Famer in professional sports on the team side, when there's like what's going on with Brady, for instance, that he, you know, is he going to spend a year or two with some other team, and it just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't sit right. It has that kind of a feel to it. And I'm sure for Ron Anderson, how does Ron Anderson say no when Johnny calls him to take his book? So you can understand the how and why on that front. I mean, for the issue that cropped up, has to do with Tis the Law and Johnny working him when Manny Franco couldn't. And of course, Manny has the book, has his book with, that's Angel's other rider. And, you know, the fact that Barclay Tagg's not making a change and is sticking with Manny Franco, that had kind of a flashpoint to it in this circumstance. So the rider that, you know, that's, you know, missing a chair in musical chairs here is Umberto Rispoli. And he, you know, he's a big talent, and you know, certainly won't have, you know, a problem getting well represented. But on the flip side, and actually probably a good time to get John in here. I flip flopped him with Cassie, and John can, you know, talk about the fallout in California with Rispoli. But this was one of those stories. I usually, when jocks switch agent, you don't, it's one of those things that you don't necessarily, you know, it's a personnel note. It isn't a monumental topic typically, but this one, a little different. So I had to mention it. And of course, as we were going out, I mentioned the departure of Tim Ritvo after close to a decade at the Stronach Group. And I think you last year at this time, I made very clear my feeling on what was going on at Santa Anita. I will say that those years when Tim started as general manager at Gulfstream, I've never seen anybody work as hard. I remember saying this several times. You'd go to Gulfstream, and you know, if you were somebody that walked around and spent different parts of a day at the racetrack, you know, all over the place, I'd never seen anything like it, really. If you were up in Christine Lee's, there was Tim, you know, talking to people, checking on things. You'd go down to the paddock, there Tim was there. You'd go to the into the that breezeway, and there he is making sure everything's going well. I've never seen anything like it. I never saw anybody work as hard. And where things evolved from there is, to me, very unfortunate. And there are some things that have gone on, that went on under his tenure, that I imagine from a corporate standpoint were, you know, well intentioned, but they've had generally a very negative effect on a lot of aspects of the game. That's all. I have to say it. I wish things were different, but they weren't. We'll bring John White to the fore, and John got to be looking forward to making those lines and handicapping Saturday's big cap card with the San Felipe, the Kilrow, and more. And certainly was taking an interest and was excited about the weekend, and that wasn't just at Santa Anita, and certainly John taking in the action from Gulfstream and everywhere. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's it going today?
All right. John, I want to get in some recapping from Santa Anita. We didn't get a chance yesterday to talk. I mentioned it just in passing that Jeff Mullins won again, and this is become a habit. The Red Baron Barn and Rancho Temescal and Harry Bow, in this case, winning the Pasadena. And, Mullins, you and I had this conversation. It's kind of remarkable what's transpired with him. He's become a top turf trader.
Well, he certainly has, but not only that, but Harry Bow was ridden to victory by Umberto Rispoli.
Uh-huh.
And that guy has become an absolute sensation here at Santa Anita. And he is involved in that decision of Ron Anderson to take the book of Johnny V, because Rispoli came to Santa Anita from Hong Kong, largely among the advice of Ron Anderson. And it's been a wonderful 1-2 punch for Anderson as an agent to have Joel Rosario and Rispoli. And Rispoli now is agentless, or will be agentless, and But we have Scott McClellan sitting in the wings here, and there's rampant speculation, and understandably so, that McClellan, because of Joe Talamo departing Southern California and riding at Oaklawn Park, that it would be Scott McClellan. If I were making a morning line for that, I would have to make McClellan the odds-on favorite at this point. And, I mean, Rispoli couldn't ask for a better agent, and to me, Scotty couldn't ask for a better client. So, I mean, you talk about a perfect match. It just that's about the only thing that gives me pause. It looks like it's just too... When something looks too good, you start to get nervous. But, I mean, this Rispoli, this guy, Frank Miramati and I have been talking for the last several weeks about just, I mean, he and I both have been so impressed with this guy. I mean, he is a tremendous talent. He just really is. And it really hasn't caught on with the horse players to the extent that, you know, he's getting over bet or anything, because I'm waiting for that shoe to drop at some point where these horses are going to start getting, you know, substantial play. They're getting some play because he's on them. And I'm talking about when he's on a horse that looks like on form that they don't have much of a chance. But, boy, anything he's getting on these days has a chance in my book. And that was just yet another illustration, this horrible, of Rispoli and his talents. And he's just, it's just so exciting here with this guy. So, and I the thing that I was telling Frank, you know, for the past couple of weeks or so was I was afraid that Rispoli would be leaving to go back east because of the fact that Ron Anderson's his agent and Joel Rosario would be going to Keeneland. And so I figured that Rispoli would be following along and would be going to Kentucky as well. So I'm excited at the prospect of Rispoli staying here because he is absolutely a huge plus for this riding colony in my book.
No, it's apparent. And one of the things that I thought made itself clear was who had seen his potential right away, and the Cruel Jack barn latched onto him within minutes. I mean, he was riding every Cruel Jack horse from, you know, from the opening bell, and they took a hold of him. So they've been a beneficiary, and pretty much you know, it's been a nice addition. He's been a great addition. So,
well, I will tell you this, that I was asked one time during my tenure in this sport if I would be interested in taking somebody's book as an agent. And I was working for the Daily Racing Form as a reporter and columnist in the early 1980s. And one morning at Hollywood Park, Daryl McGard came up to me and said, "Would you be interested in taking my book?" And I said, "Well, I certainly would consider it. And can I think about it overnight and talk it over with my wife?" And he said, "Absolutely." And so I came home and said to my wife, I said, "I was just offered the opportunity today to be an agent." And she, the first thing she said was, "What happens if something happens to where he's not writing?" I said, "Nothing's coming in."
Yeah,
and that kind of nipped that in the bud right then and there. But I've got to say that in all these years since the early 1980s, the only time I've been tempted to pull one of these that we've seen some of these guys do that have worked in racing offices or had other jobs and then jump into the agent business, for instance, Mr. Brador with Florent Giroux is a good example where he was working in racing offices and doing very well doing that. And then he decided to take the book of Florent Giroux, and they've never looked back. And this was one situation where the minute I put two and two together and realized Rispoli was going to be open, it was tempting to sit here and say, "You know what, I think maybe I'd be interested in throwing my two cents into this." But a couple of reality checks came in. First of all, my age, it would be a little hard for me to go up to Mr. Rispoli and say, "Hey, you know," but I'll tell you, I wouldn't lack enthusiasm in building my case for the guy.
Sure,
But, you know, it's a little hard to change careers, really, at my point in my career. And so, you know, and then what really was the final check on my thoughts about that, to where I abandoned it, was the fact that I thought, well, geez, Scotty McClellan is sitting there available,
yeah,
and he's extremely experienced. He's one of the best agents I've been around, of many top agents in my lifetime, particularly having been around so many. You and I spent a whole morning with Vince DeGregory, for instance. There's one of the best agents of all time. And, you know, you can go right down the line of great agents I've been around. And here's one of them sitting there available. So I'm thinking, well, it wouldn't be in the best interest of Rispoli to pick me over Scotty McClellan, for Pete's sakes. And I'd be honest and tell him that. So, you know, I think back to the morning back in the 1980s when I was standing waiting for John Henry to work and clock him with Ron McAnally, and the subject came around to agents, not just jockey agents, but bloodstock agents, or, you know, whatever agents. And Ron McAnally, out of the blue, said, I would advise you to never be an agent. And he said to me, and I said, well, why would you say that? And he says, you're too honest.
Well, it's a tough field. We've had plenty of jock agent conversations. There's going to be a story coming out too this week about somebody else entering the fray and making a career move on that front. We'll circle back to that when the timing is right. John, let's talk about what went on this weekend, and aside, you know, other Santa Anita action that caught your eye, anything else? You know, one of the topics that came up yesterday with Johnny was this golden hour double, the $5 minimum, and it feels like, you know, this is going to have this should have some traction, and apparently we hear that Keeneland is going to have a high denomination bet when their menu comes out for April.
Well, we kind of see the ebbs and flows of this. I will say that when I was a youngster betting the horses back in the 1960s and 70s, and early in my career, there was only the $2 daily double, which was a huge deal. I mean, people would say, hey, I hit the double. Who'd you like in the double? I mean, the double was everything, because other than win, place, and show, that was it. And then a lot of tracks added a $5 exacta on the last race. The purpose of the double to begin with was to get people to come out to the track early in the card, you know, for the start of the card, rather than just come in at, during the card and or maybe even just show up near the feature race. The $5 exacta came in, for the most part, to try to keep people there after the feature race, because a lot of times when there was no exotic on the last race, people would watch whoever won the stakes race that day and then head to the cars to try to beat the traffic or what have you. And so people with the $5 exacta, but for me as a kid, and it's one reason I became a multi-race better more than a exacta or a trifecta or superfecta better, is the fact that that was too expensive for me when I was just a kid. I mean, $5, that was really essentially a $10 quinella versus a $2 double on the first and second races. So, like, if I went to the track with $10 or $20, which when you're a kid, that's a lot of times what you're doing, I could get a lot more bang for my buck betting that daily double, which was a $2 minimum, than the exacta, which was a $5 minimum. And so it just, that was where my roots lie in the game. And so then we came in, and the reason I say this is because I say, where were all these 10-cent or dollar or 50-cent wagers when I was a kid? I would have really liked that a lot, because I could have got a lot more bang for my buck with those minimums. So now we're kind of swinging back toward the what we had when we came in with the $5 exacta, to have this $5 double, and it's kind of refreshing, and it's nice. They promoted it well in a short period of time. It handled well. Over 100,000 with, you know, only coming out of the starting gate. So it seems like it's good. And the thing I've always said in this sport, there's nothing wrong with trying something and seeing if it's going to work. And, you know, even Santa Anita, even under the Rivo regime, came up with roulette wagering, which after about 1 week I could see I didn't think there was really much merit in that, quite frankly. And to the credit of Santa Anita, they did it for one meet and then said, you know, that's the end of the roulette business. And so I hope to not see a resurrection of that at any time in the near future. Quite honestly, it just I just don't think that really worked. But it looks like this $5 wager that's tying two tracks, too, which is good. And I know you and I both have been a fan of these races. You know, I was on the Magna 5 show on HRTV for years. I really enjoyed that Magna 5 where we had those races in a short period of time at different tracks. And I think that that Magna 5 was very popular during its existence. Now we have the Stronach 5. I think that's been popular. And you've got, you know, these other wagers that are tying tracks together. So I think it is a good thing.
Yeah, and we'll have I've asked a couple of people, and it was Paul Matisse that originally brought this up. I don't know, three, four years ago, as part of the work that the Breeders' Cup was trying with the head to head. You know, that was the most recent sort of flare that went up. You know, the $10 head to head bet, but it feels like this is going to get real traction, and you know they're. I think that's got to be you know, fleshed out in some of the more of the details. John, let's turn our attention to the racing from this weekend away from Santa Anita as well. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the Fountain of Youth. And then we'll swing back and talk about the San Felipe and the Big Cap and the way they're shaping up.
Well, the Fountain of Youth was an important race, as we all know, for Dennis's Moment, and to be such a dreadful race, in a way, it's unfortunate because we like stars, and Dennis's Moment had shown glimpses of stardom last year as a two-year-old. He was an odds-on favorite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and his race was over right at the start with a stumble coming out of the gate and trailed throughout, but seemingly had trained well in preparation for his 2020 debut here, was sent off as the 6-5 favorite with Flavian Pratt riding, coming in from Southern California. And, boy, I midway down the backside, I thought, boy, I don't know about this for Dennis's Moment today. And I thought, well, you know, it's pretty early still. And when they got onto the far turn, it was very clear this was not going to be his day. The thing about this race to me is, once again, and I've talked this guy up big on your show, I've talked him up big my whole life, going clear back to the early 80s, and that's Patrick Bioncombe. This guy is just an outstanding, sharp guy. I mean, as I say recently on your show, I wouldn't want to sit across the poker table from this guy. This guy is as sharp as they come, and now he's got two horses that are on the Derby trail here, and they complement each other, and that Ete Indian has early speed, and Solo Volante, he's a stone come from behind her. So, I mean, that's like an ideal situation right there between the two of them, and in terms of their running styles. And but what really impressed me about this win for Ete Indian, you know, Giroux very smartly utilized Ete Indian's zip to get from that 10 hole and get down to that rail as quickly as he could, and he got down there very quickly. But when you utilize that much, when a horse has to expend that much energy early in a race, you're not going to typically see them draw off in the lane like this horse did and open up to win by 8.5. So the combination of what this horse did early and what he did late shows to me this is a very serious horse. According to Bianconi, he's headed to the Florida Derby. He'll get his chance at revenge against Tiz the Law, and this win by Ete Indian flattered Tiz the Law because Tiz the Law beat Ete Indian by 3 lengths in the Holy Bull. So, and I have Tiz the Law ranked number one on my Kentucky Derby rankings, and certainly that was not in any way, shape, or form diminished to have him number one by virtue of the performance of Ete Indian. And and then you throw in Independence Hall into the Florida Derby and so forth. So it looks like this year's Florida Derby, which last year was taken by Maximum Security, is going to be shape up as a very strong Florida Derby this year. And you mentioned the San Felipe. We're certainly really looking forward to that here at Santa Anita in terms of the road to the Kentucky Derby, because Bob Baffert is expected to have a strong 1-2 punch of his own here with the and both undefeated Colts and Thousand Words and Authentic. And then you throw in Honor AP. And the thing about Honor AP is that I think people need to bear in mind the total situation with him. John Sheriffs is not going to run Honor AP in this race as if it's the Kentucky Derby. And John Sheriffs is one of those trainers of the ilk of a Charlie Whittingham, a Neil Drysdale, guys that are outstanding at having a horse ready for their peak effort on a big day. I'll tell you another trainer I feel that way about, too, is kind of Michael Maker, and he does it with horses that are big prices in big races, and he has them ready to fire their best shot in a big race. And so that's the case with Honor AP. In other words, what I'm saying is Honor AP's situation vis-a-vis the Kentucky Derby, whether he wins or doesn't win the Kentucky Derby, does not depend on whether he wins the San Felipe. He doesn't have to win this race. This is a building block for John Sheriffs. It's a starting point. And so I would expect AP to run well, but I wouldn't necessarily be licking my chops at him to win the race. Yet he's very talented, and I wouldn't like completely rule out the possibility either, because when you go back and look at his two races, there's a reason there was so much excitement that surrounding Honor AP off just his two races. When he sprinted at Del Mar against Ginobili, he was absolutely out of the race early. He was so far back, and he came flying like a maniac down the lane. And Ginobili's not exactly chopped liver, as he showed when he ran a very strong second to Nadal in the San Vicente. But you know that Honor AP, sprinting is not his game, and hence he was hammered to strong favoritism when he went a mile in his next race at Santa Anita. And what was really illuminating about that performance was, for someone who had been so far back in his debut sprinting, he went right to the front with Mike Smith in this two-turn race and then drew off in the stretch and got a serious buyer for a two-year-old at that time of the year in 91. So there's tremendous talent here. He's got such a long stride, this guy, and he just covers the ground, so much ground, and he does it he just kind of in a floating manner. So he's an exciting horse, and but I don't necessarily feel like it's, unlike Dennis's Moment, whose performance in the Fountain of Youth really knocks down his stock for the Kentucky Derby at this point. Now he's got to come back and at some point redeem himself. Honor AP does not, as I say, have to win the San Felipe to be considered a serious Kentucky Derby horse, because John Sheriffs is going to use this as step one on the road to the Kentucky Derby. And it's John Sheriffs, to me, that will be very capable of having Honor AP primed for a dynamite effort on the first Saturday in May. And then Baffert with Thousand Words, who's kind of a grinding type, Silver Charmish type horse that doesn't do anything particularly flashy, but Authentic was so impressive in the Sham. Racing Greenlee, I thought he was going to hit the inside rail coming down the lane when he ducked in, and he was extremely green in the final furlong and still won by almost 8. So he's really good. And then Storm the Court's kind of interesting in this race too, because I think his first race was kind of a building block for trainer Peter Urton, and it wasn't that bad. He didn't lose that San Vicente by all that much. Just like a 2.5 lengths. It was a wide trip, and they went so fast early. This was a race really not in the comfort zone for Storm the Court, but it was a place to get started on the road to the Kentucky Derby. He's going to be ridden for the first time in this race by Joel Rosario. I can see them making a very good team. Nothing against Pratt, and I understand why Pratt's going to stick with Thousand Words, because that's Bob Baffert. So that makes total sense. But Pratt had to pick between one or the other and his agent, Derek Lawson, and they picked, obviously, I think, the right way. Certainly, 1,000 words is going to be a shorter price in the San Felipe than Storm the Court. But this Storm the Court, I wouldn't necessarily be totally giving up on him yet. And he got an 86 buyer in that San Vicente. I expect him to make a pretty good move forward here, quite possibly in the San Felipe, off of his 86 in the San Vicente. And he's not one to be taken lightly in this spot. And I think you're going to get a kind of a decent price because people are kind of down on him. He got, you know, a pretty low buyer for winning a Breeders' Cup race in 87. And, you know, and the jury's out on him. He might not be all that much either, but it isn't like this is a horse that, unlike Dennis's Moment, who you get 6-5 in the Fountain of Youth, you're not going to have to get 6-5 even money, 7-5 on Storm the Court. You're going to get a 4-1, 5-1, 6-1. I mean, he was he wasn't even the favorite as the Eclipse Award winner coming into that race because of the excitement associated with Daydahl in the San Vicente.
Who are you going to make favorite, John?
Haven't decided yet. That's a good question. What is your thinking on that? I mean, because to me, it's Authentic or 1,000 Words, and to me, I'm going to put them like right next to each other. I mean, they're going to be the first and second choices. I've been going back and forth on that, so at this time that's still up in the air. But if you had to sit down and say which one's going to be favored, what would you say?
1,000 Words. It'd be. I don't know how you don't. You know how he's not favored. You know, just on
well, part,
basis
part
of accomplishment.
Part of the reason why I think there's a chance he wouldn't go favored, just to play devil's advocate on that, is the fact that he doesn't win by big margins, and he hasn't really posted like a huge buyer. And Authentic went out there and the winning by the big margin like that, and plus Baffert has fueled a lot of hype here on Authentic. He's really talked up Authentic actually much more than 1,000 Words. So, and sometimes the Baffert talking up can actually come into play to some
sure.
extent. So, you know, I went back and looked at the Kentucky Derby Future Pool, the most recent one, and they were virtually the same price in that, which is another illustration to me that we're splitting hairs of which one. To me, it really could tip one way or the other here. You know, 1,000 Words has accomplished much more. He's a two-time Grade 2 winner, whereas Authentic is only a one-time Grade 3 winner. So from that standpoint, I'm inclined to make 1,000 Words a slight favorite. But as I say, that big win sitting there on Authentic by the big margin, and the way Authentic's been bet is, you know, he came out odds on first time out and then was 6-5 in that sham. It's not like 1,000 Words hasn't been well played either. He was 6-5 in his debut, but he wasn't even the favorite in his second race, the Los Al Futurity. You know, the fact he didn't go favored there is a little bit of a tip-off. There's a chance he wouldn't necessarily go favored here. So, and it didn't help 1,000 Words that Anneau d'Or ran so poorly in Louisiana, when that's one of the claims to fame for 1,000 Words, that he won the Los Al Futurity. The poor performance by Anneau d'Or kind of softens the record of 1,000 Words a little bit. But it's not like Authentic, you know, was beating American Pharoah or somebody when he won the sham either. In other words, you know, but he beat it. See, his form's actually been flattered because Azul Coast went up and won the El Camino Real Derby. So when you look at who they've beaten, Authentic already gets kind of a plus over 1,000 Words a little bit from that standpoint. It could go either. That's a back and forth. I've been going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Beating Azul Coast, who went up and got what a 77 buyer.
Just beat him. He drilled him by eight, and he was running all over the racetrack in the final furlong too.
I get
so
it.
That's another
I get it.
To Authentic is the fact that he won that race big without even. And the thing about that running Greenlee in the stretch, he hasn't shown any signs of that in his subsequent workouts. And Baffert has talked about, you know, he's going to run with earplugs this time and so forth. In other words, I don't really anticipate Authentic with those types of antics again. It could happen because, you know, there's a difference between the morning and the afternoon. But I fully expect Authentic not to run Greenlee this time. And he, you know, Jeff Siegel has Authentic ranked number one on his rankings. That tells you something right there. He doesn't have Thousand Words ranked number one. He's got Authentic ranked number one. So that tells you something. So, you know, this is that's a real toughie. So
well, we'll look forward to it, John. A couple other quick ones before we wrap up. I got Andy Serling joining us shortly, but the other big names, obviously, on the card Saturday, the opportunity for John Sheriffs to win a big cap, certainly a story with Midcourt. And we got Gott Stormy, who we're looking forward to seeing, and hopefully she rights the ship. We'll talk to Mark Cassie in the third hour today and get a quick update on her. But you'll have a couple of short prices undoubtedly on the line.
Well, John Sadler's going to try for history here.
That's true, right?
Very meaningful if Sadler does it, because he's a Southern California native, and the big
three cap
for those of us, it's so meaningful, even though it's lost a lot of its luster due to these races like the Dubai World Cup and the Saudi Cup and the Pegasus. But Sadler, with sending out Gift Box, who was going to be very tough in this race, and no trainer has won the Santa Anita Handicap three times, and Sadler has a chance to do it. He has a chance to do it with three different horses, which is really quite impressive here. And not only that, Combatant is not without a total chance in the big cap, but he's also going to come from the Sadler barn. But Sadler hoping to join the ranks. You know, right now he's a two-time big cap winner, which puts him in the same category as Silent Tom Smith, Ron McAnally, Charlie Whittingham, Richard Mandela, Bobby Frankel, Doug O'Neill, and Baffert. Baffert won four big caps within 5 years, three of those with Game On Dude, but Baffert never won the big cap three times in a row. And that's what Sadler's trying to become the first trainer to do, to win three big caps in a row. And Doug O'Neill, I'm glad to see him on the Hall of Fame ballot. That's nice. And Game On Dude, who is the only three-time big cap winner, is on that ballot, too. And that's one of the reasons Game On Dude's on the ballots, because he's the only horse to win the Santa Anita Handicap three times. So that'll be good, because Midcourt is a very, very good horse in his own right, and will be tough in this race, too. But I think Gift Box will be a strong favorite and tough to beat.
All right. I've certainly been impressed by Midcourt. I will look forward to these PPs. John, I appreciate it, and should be a tremendous Saturday. The big gap is always the big gap, no matter who lines up.
Well, it really is, that's for sure. And one thing about that Gift Box Midcourt matchup is the fact that Gift Box and Midcourt met in the San Antonio, and it was unfortunate because Midcourt didn't break that day. But that line sitting right there in which Gift Box absolutely creamed Midcourt that day, if there was any doubt who was going to be the favorite in the race, that in itself would indicate that Gift Box will be favored. But Gift Box comes in with better buyer figures and a decisive decision over Midcourt. So Gift Box will be a pretty strong favorite here for Sadler. And like I say, having known John for decades, I would really be tickled if John Sadler were able to win a third straight big cap with three different horses. That would be tremendous.
Well, but didn't Gift Box won last year?
That's right. So two different horses. Yeah, that's right.
Very good.
Thank you for setting me straight on that.
Well, but of course, what if Combatant wins it?
Well, there you go.
Then it's with three different horses.
That's right.
I love it. I love it. And Higher Power is not running, right?
No. He is not. Sadler said he is not running. So
okay, yeah. So
looking at John Fields, though, which has become the norm for just about every category we have here these days. Unfortunately,
well, so, the matchups, as long as there's quality to, you know, to the three, four principles, which there is, racing will be good. It's going
to
be a good day.
Like you pointed out, it isn't like you go back in the day to where every card was chock full of, especially the stakes. I mean, I love it when you bring that up and you happen to come across it a year.
All the time.
You know, 20 years ago or something, you go, huh, boy, what happened there? There were only five in that race that so-and-so won, and there was plenty of that back then, too. People just, for some reason, don't remember that.
Exactly. John White, I appreciate it. We'll watch for John's line and his analysis for the Big Cap card, San Felipe, Kilroe, San Carlos, and more. We'll take a break here. Andy Serling is going to join us next. Dr. Allday coming up as well. I put out the link with the Cassie op-ed from TDN, so you can read it in advance of his visit. Jeremy Plonk as well for some Countdown to the Crown back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Whether at home, at the track, or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I fell in love with your body and soul. My hands feel sticky and my head's eyes cold. My sugar tastes sour, my salt tastes sweet. I want to lay down, but I just can't sleep.
We're back at the races. About 8 minutes into hour two, and Andy Serling from the New York Racing Association joins us. Speaking of voodoo, Eric Guillot expected at Aqueduct on Saturday with Sisto in the Gotham.